Freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
But I want to get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
After all, a bunch of slaves. A bunch of slaves.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of me?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and this is Anti-Media Radio, July the 14th, 2015. Your home of alternative news to get away from the corporate agenda and the mainstream narrative. So far in 2015, 620 Americans have been killed by police officers. 64 police officers have died in the line of duty as well. The city of Chicago, with their strict gun laws, have seen 1,425 people shot in the streets, as well as 248 homicides. And Saudi Arabia is still on the blackout, with 100 beheadings so far this year being reported. That is definitely a topic that we discuss in length, and ever since they hit the 100 mark, nothing has come out of the country since. We do know from the wiki cables that Saudi Arabia is definitely in control of a lot of the media financially throughout the world, and we are seeing it in effect with the numbers completely drying up. Bear with me tonight, a little bit under the weather. But we're going to get through the show and try to get some information out to everybody. Joined here in the studio tonight is Mr. Chase Madden. Chase, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, SM. I'm doing great, man.
And also joining the studio, Mr. Daniel Perez. Daniel.
I'm doing awesome. Great, awesome.
And these two men are going to try to help me steer my way through the show. Hopefully I won't go off on a rant or just pass out here, whatever's going on. So there's a lot going on in the news, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. We've got the VA situation happening, which has not really been reported very widely at all, and I just think it's an absolutely terrifying stat that we have seen over 200,000 veterans die waiting to get health care from the VA.
I mean, that's ridiculous. To have over 200,000 veterans who have gone and, you know, of course, served for our country, dying as they're waiting to receive health care, I mean, that's the epitome of the whole entire, you know, system of government that we are under, of course. But it's like, when I read that stat, I was wondering, you know, why is it that the people who actually sent them to war, you know, the congressman, the president, they, of course, you know, you serve one term in your lifetime as even a representative, you have the best health care there is.
Right.
But unfortunately, you know, the people who actually serve our country and
doing
it,
putting in the work, putting in the dirty work.
And, exactly. Here's the scary part, too. It's one third of veterans who are enrolled. So out of 847,822 people, 238,657 people died before they could get treatment. And this is a leaked document from the VA. It's called the Analysis of Death Services. And, of course, the VA is trying to act like this isn't a big deal.
Because they're acting like it's not a big deal because it is a big deal.
It is.
I mean, the fact that we treat our American veterans, you know, as second-class citizens, essentially, is...
It's one-third of veterans waiting for health care, basically.
I mean, one-third, that's insane.
So out of every three veterans you see on the street, one of them is going to die before the VA even gives two tosses about them. And the irony of that, to me, is talking about, well, we support the troops, we support the troops. No, you support sending the troops over to die.
Exactly.
But when they're back here and they should be taken care of, nobody does anything for them.
Just suck it up.
You don't support our troops that actually, you know, fight the wars that you had initiated or, you know, approved of. I mean, it's baffling to me.
That people that have this sense of they're cheerleaders for war and they do it under the guise of supporting the troops. But if they supported the troops, then this stat wouldn't exist.
Yeah, they would get health care.
This is what people would be, you know, waving their flags on the street corner for, would be this stat about how all these veterans who were sent overseas.
But instead it's, you know, the whole rally around the flag, blah, 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 and we, of course, support our troops once they're overseas. But once they return, you know, our government can't, you know, support the VA with the amount of money that they need to give our, you know, veterans the health care that they need. Instead, they, of course, put it many other places that, I mean, I won't even begin to go into. But another thing I want to touch on this, which is kind of very, it angered me, is I want to see our congressman. I mean, it angers me that one representative, as a representative, can serve one term and have the greatest health insurance ever for a lifetime.
They got the best health insurance in the world, man. We can get that straight right now.
Well, of course they do. I mean, they are congressmen. They are royalty, essentially.
Which is what they become, obviously. I mean, you know, that's kind of what they turn into, and that's what's so scary, is that they become these elites from one term. But here's another question.
I mean, I don't want to see them to be elite. That is what is bullshit, in my opinion.
They shouldn't be.
They should. Veterans, honestly, in my opinion, should get better health care and better pay on top of than what our congressmen.
But see, here's the thing,
these men are the ones they're the ones going on the front lines, risking their lives.
I would love, I mean, granted,
for what
I
they
know
believe
there has been a certain amount of our congressmen who have been in the military and actually have served their country.
But it ain't
but
that
the
many.
Majority have.
It ain't that many.
But I think, but where I agree with y'all at the same time, as well, you know, we're talking about we want the government to run our health care in this country, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing an example of the government running the healthcare system through the VA. And
I mean,
one-third of people are dying before they even get help.
The government running anything. Look at the post office, our postal system. It's bankrupt. I mean, are you serious? The government
what
running
in this
any
country is not
entity
bankrupt?
That... well, that's
well, it's all
story,
about,
but,
you know, it all has these good intentions. Any program... But they're skimming off the top and what little leavings they can to just, you know, throw into it. It's kind of like when you see those, like, charity programs where it says portion of the proceeds are going to such and such.
No.
It's kind of like with any other program within our government, our system of government.
In my opinion, it's the media along with, well, maybe it's the media, it definitely is the media, but following the political aspect of it from our congressmen who are, you know, rally around the flag, you know, support our troops, they come back home, and then, as the statistic has just shown, they're dying in, you know, large numbers. That is just ridiculous.
Before they can even
because,
get treatment.
Exactly. And this is such a small, I mean, not small, but such a simple problem to fix. And that is, you know, give them more funding. I'm sorry that they are so...
But the government, you got to remember, I tell you what, before
when they're so backlogged...
I tell you what, before we get to this point, I want to go ahead and bring on our guest for the evening, Ms. Claire Burnish. Claire, how you doing, dear?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing good. Okay, so tell us what's going on in your world tonight. I know you've got a couple of big stories up on theantimedia.org right now.
Yes. I think one story that isn't, I don't think it's getting quite the attention it should, is the American Psychological Association psychologists might as well have been actively participating in CIA torture. By omission, more or less, they brought their ethics standards up to meet the Department of Defense's, where the Department of Defense was sort of, you know, kind of justifying torture through their policy. And instead of the APA going in and adjusting the standards of ethics so that torture couldn't happen, they just kind of matched the DOD so that it could.
And the scary thing about that article to me, Claire, was that they basically changed the definition of the word ethics to fit around the word torture as opposed to the way it should be. And, you know, the guy in charge of ethics should say, hey, you shouldn't be doing this.
Right, exactly. And they just sort of, they knew, I mean, there's no way, according to this report, that's like over, it's almost 550 pages, but there's no way they couldn't have known that torture was going on, like very extreme torture. And instead of doing anything to stop it, they basically green-lighted it for the Department of Defense and for the Pentagon, for the CIA. I mean, they didn't do anything to stop it when they really obviously should have. They were in a position where they could have written the policy to say, you know, hey, there's no way this is acceptable, but instead they just basically said, yes, it is.
And the scary thing is, you know, I think so much of this that's gone on, we've done, you know, movements about torture, we've done a few hashtag storms about torture. We've done days against torture with multiple people and activists that we all know. And it doesn't get the attention that it needs because it doesn't happen here in this country and they don't see it. So they, you know, just kind of like, hey, whatever, you know, it doesn't affect
exactly.
Them.
Well, see, exactly. But, you know, I mean, like you let something happen somewhere and you open the door for anything anywhere. I just think that should be emphasized. You know, there is a tendency to kind of ignore anything that happens overseas, but now that we're all globalized, everything, there's a chance that anything can happen here that we allow to happen elsewhere. And when we don't stand up, you know, and say, hey, this is wrong, then we just, I don't know, I just think it leaves that door wide open. I don't think that's a good idea.
I think it absolutely does. And, you know, I think that even what you just said kind of ties into the NDAA and, you know, the whole, you know, we can just start rounding people up without trying them and indefinitely detain them. And,
exactly.
And that completely ties into what you're saying. And yet, well, it's not happening yet. It's like Obama said when Ben Swan questioned him, well, I'm not going to do it. So
right.
That's the thing. We don't do it. I've read many, many articles throughout my lifetime pertaining to torture from America on our, of course, our captives, military-wise. But the thing is, I've always read that they send them to, for instance, you know, Saudi Arabia, even Russia, back before we, when we actually had good relations with Russia. They send them overseas, or rather, they give them control of them so they can torture them, so that way we don't have our hands dirty. But essentially we still do, you know.
But I think,
but
even
just
with,
because we pass it on to someone else doesn't mean that it's not us.
We do the same thing with our arms trafficking.
But I think that we've actually been caught, especially with what's happened, you know, with Abu Ghraib and that entire situation. We've been caught red-handed doing
exactly.
It.
But
we have, but think also about Holman Square and the black site with the Chicago police.
Absolutely.
There's torture there.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're completely right.
And that's people going completely off the grid, disappearing for days, no charge, no jury, no trial, no anything.
Exactly. I mean, if people see it overseas and they say it can't happen here, I mean, look around, it always does. Once that door is open, no matter if they say they're not going to use it or not, once they open it, it's available.
And that's the thing, you know, and I think that's how they introduce this stuff to society, is it's very incremental. And they say, you know, you hear these rumors of it happening here. Well, that's not happening to me, so it's no big deal.
It's never true.
You know, it's never going to be me and my family. And the next thing you know, it is you and your family, and it's too late to do anything about it.
Exactly. The same thing with, like, surveillance and the surveillance state now. And, you know, we used to see, at least when I was really young, we would hear stories about, like, you know, the USSR and stuff with all their surveillance. And, it's, you know, now we have it. I mean, I don't know. I don't think people pay quite enough attention to the things in the context of it's always possible here once it's possible anywhere. you know, with the military law of war manual that came out, they said specifically that the rules of war basically apply anywhere in the world. So, you know, there's that door.
And, you know, I hate to be too Alex Jones, George H.W. Bush about this, but it really is kind of a new world order, this one global empire, even though we all have different separate, you know, nation states with different names, you know, we're all kind of doing the same thing at this point.
Well, we're all connected on the same old little line of trade, Dylan, you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, sadly, it's the laws of war, in my opinion. Granted, I'm not for that at all, but unfortunately, we have those, you know, military hawks that have been in the military for their entire lives, and they think this is the only the only way we can extract any information from these people, and they haven't tried anything different, and, you know, by maybe, you know, offering them a better life in here in the United States, you know, bringing their family.
Well,
over
we can't even take it. We just got done talking about we can't take care of our own veterans. So what are we talking about here?
Okay, well, I understand that, and I guess that plays in the whole picture of everything else.
But I tell you what, speaking of the military, Claire, you've got another story up, Sue, that's just absolutely fascinating that we were just sitting here just going over and over before the show tonight. Tell us about that a little bit.
I did the hollow point thing with the Army.
Yeah, that's just fascinating.
Yeah, the Army is apparently going to be switching to hollow point ammunition over what they've used for a long, long time, which is this full metal jacket ball ammunition. And they're doing this because they claim it's a humanitarian thing to do, which is interesting considering that the Hague Convention said
1907,
said that expanding and fragmenting ammunition is considered excessive and basically cruel and unusual because it causes so much damage inside a person. And they're saying that, you know, ball ammunition can pass through the target person and into an innocent bystander, so they're justified in doing this. But at the same time, you know, that the convention exists for a reason, and basically we're just saying, well, nobody else is sticking to that principle, so why should we bother doing it either?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you kind of the conversation we started having about it tonight. And
well, I mean, with a hollow point especially, you have, which I disagree with the fact that it's inhumane. I mean, I think it's inhumane.
It is to the person. Well, first off, it clearly is inhumane,
I mean,
to the
person.
Honestly,
if you're getting shot, you're getting shot for a reason. Well, I'd say 90% of the time.
Well, no, here's the deal.
But if you have a projectile, like a full metal jacket, you're shooting a terrorist who is literally trying to kill a Marine or an American citizen, for that matter, and then it passes through, and the projectile has slowed down so much that then it, you know, goes through another person, and then it's stuck within that person, a civilian, a bystander, that's inhumane. I mean, I'm a gun owner, I will admit, and I do have in my weapon, because I have it for defensive purposes, but I have hollow points, and I have hollow points because if, God forbid, something happened and I actually have to shoot an intruder or something, I would not want a full metal jacket bullet passing through that intruder into my next door neighbor and, you know, possibly killing them or injuring them. And so with that, you know, said, I agree on that aspect. But at the same time, I kind of, once I heard that, it made me speculate. As a military man, if I were, I've never been in the military. I do support our military. But if I were in the field and I was in the middle of, let's say, for instance, Afghanistan back in the heyday, and I had nothing but hollow points in my, in my ammunition loaded into my weapon, and I am ambushed by, let's say, you know, one vehicle with five individuals in it that is, for instance, maybe ISIS, who has, you know, majority of our Humvees that are armored. And I'm shooting at that Humvee with nothing but a hollow point. I'm not going to be able to penetrate any point of that Humvee. And so what I'm trying to say with that is, there has to be something else. Being, you know, another reason why they're transitioning. I mean, if it's just strictly special forces, you know, trying to go in and, you know, kill Osama bin Laden and not wanting to injure his family, I understand that. But if it's throughout the entire army, I mean, that's a whole different subject, in my opinion.
I mean, they're commissioning almost 300,000 new weapons because they're switching from the M9 Beretta to the they call it the XM17. And the idea is that they're looking for ammunition, new ammunition for this new weapon.
To make it more deadly. I don't understand that concept. I'm sorry.
Why? What?
Well, I mean, I have an M9 myself, and, I mean, it's as deadly as it could possibly be. I mean, we have ammunition that literally explodes, explosive ammunition, if they want to make things more deadly. That is a different story. I would imagine that's probably more of the whole military compound, whatnot, whatever, I forget what it's called. But what I'm trying to say with this, though, with the ammunition part, there is a different agenda, I believe.
I think what you're trying to say is why is the military trying to placate, you know, saving civilians, but at the same time...
Well, yeah, I mean, if they want to save so many civilians, then let's stop, you know, the whole entire drone warfare that we're doing.
Right, but I mean, we could go down that road forever, right. But at the same time, you're saying, why are they taking this ammunition that is more precise to the person instead of just sweeping? You know, exactly. What's the agenda? Are they going to use it internally here? Are they going to use it domestically?
States.
Right. I think that's where you're going
with it.
That's
what the point I was saying. I didn't really say it out loud. Because, I mean, in my opinion, again, pertaining to that, I think having our soldiers walking around, you know, patrolling with nothing but hollow points, that threatens them. That endangers them more so than, you know, I digress on this opinion.
It just seems odd. They were saying that, like, the clips could hold more ammunition, too, because the hollow points are smaller. I don't know. It just seems like you said, it seems like there's more of a different agenda that is kind of not being discussed. Yeah. But
absolutely, I agree.
A hollow point can't even, you know, strike through a car, I mean, a regular vehicle.
And I tell you what, Daniel brought this up, Claire, and me and you have discussed this off-air a little bit, and we won't get into it too deep before... we leave you here tonight, but Afghanistan, me and you have talked about this. Me and you think there's something going on. We don't know quite what's going on yet.
Yeah, I'm fairly convinced there's something very messed up going on there. The budget figures don't seem to add up. You know, there's a raid that happened that certainly doesn't add up. There are too many mistakes in, like, clerical mistakes and missing money, and...
We're not talking about a little bit of missing money, either. We're talking a lot of money.
Right, like, billions, and I don't know, there are so... It's like, any one or two of these items on their own might be understandable, but when you start to step back and look at the entire picture, it just does not sit right at all.
I completely agree, and, you know... We were both researching it today, and it's just, you know, I think at this point, it's on our part, it is still speculation, but all the facts are pointing to something very nefarious that doesn't look right at all with what the U.S. government is still to this day involved in with Afghanistan, despite all of Obama's rhetoric.
Well, even just looking at the one report alone, that the kind of a watchdog group was checking up on the number of clinics. And they asked the Pentagon for the GPS coordinates and the longitude-latitude coordinates of where these clinics were supposed to be. And over half of them there was nothing there when they went to actually check up on the coordinates. There was nothing there. And, you know, the Pentagon says, oh, well, you know, that happens. Maybe we were off. But it's, you know, no, not with your technology. That just isn't possible. Sorry.
My telephone can tell the government where I'm at right now, and they're just all over the place with this, you know, with important quote-unquote things.
I mean, Afghanistan's such a corrupt country. I've always heard and read, even heard stories from military captains and colonels, that money has been taken to essentially buy off the Afghanis to, you know, go there.
But you're missing the point, I think. I think what you're trying to insinuate is Afghanistan's the corrupt country, but who's the person paying? Yeah, right. Who's the person that's providing all the information? Who's the person paying the money? That's the United States government.
Everyone wants to think of Afghanistan like it's the United States. We have, you know, we are separate entities with 50 states, but yet we are just the exact same people, and we can easily agree on things. That's not the case in
Afghanistan. But that even would be understandable on its own. Like, that would even make sense to a certain degree. But with all of the other factors in consideration, particularly looking in light of the raid that we did illegally, I mean, there is just too many mitigating circumstances that don't add up.
And that's the thing, Claire. Like, you know, you wrote about the raid that happened and the protests that followed, and that's not being reported anywhere. Anywhere. You know, that's terrifying that we sit here and harp on this and harp on that. And we're talking about, you know, back to the beginning of the show, we support our troops. Well, the troops are doing something, so let's talk about it. No, that, you know, that never happened. That's just terrifying to me how they spin the agenda. And, you know, when real things are happening, you know, they ignore it because that doesn't serve their interests.
Right. I mean, there's just too much. There's something going on, and it doesn't seem like anybody's really looking into it, and it doesn't really seem like anybody cares. But once again, this is something where, you know, we let this happen somewhere, and it's going to happen somewhere else too. And we're talking a lot of money, and it's mostly taxpayer money that is going to fund this stuff, or money that we borrowed from other governments. So, I mean, ultimately, it's up to us to kind of call attention to this. And I don't know, it just doesn't seem like anybody cares.
I think you're right. And I'll tell you, you know, the cynic side of me, I'll tell you the reason I don't think people care initially is because we've heard, you know, the name Afghanistan for 14 years now, and you hear that come up, and you just, you know, you kind of roll your eyes and be like, yeah, I know we're over there, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's what the average American does, and they just hear Afghanistan. Oh, I get it. We're over there. And I don't think they want to pursue looking into it any deeper, and I think that gives the United States government basically a blank check to do whatever they want because nobody cares.
Right. And I'm, you know, I had reported before on Iraq and the number of civilian casualties there, and you know, it's well over a million for sure. After looking in and investigating what the numbers actually represent, but I was reading a scholar's book today that actually reported the number over 1 million back in 2008. So, and people look at that number, and I guess maybe it's just incomprehensible or something, but they just kind of brush it off like it's nothing. But, I mean, that's a very serious offense. Those are people that if we had never invaded, they would still be going about their lives. So.
Absolutely. I mean, we had the story up yesterday about there's been at least 15,000 civilians killed in Iraq since January of 2014. And, you know, that's no big deal. People don't care.
Right.
I mean, think about how many people were killed in 9/11. And then think about that, you know, how many more people
is. That's what it takes for us to care as Americans. It takes, you know, an attack on our soil. Because, I mean, unfortunately...
It's selfishness.
Well, not unfortunately. Very, you know, glad that us as an American that we can have, you know, the freedom to have our society that we are just completely, you know, not necessarily ignorant, but occupied with our culture here in the States. But, you know...
Well, ignorance
is bliss, of course.
I'll tell you what makes people concerned is when you involve the word freedom in anything. Freedom. Freedom's under attack. Oh, man, we got to be a freedom.
You people know, are very,
well, and that's the whole rallying freedom. Around the flag aspect of it.
Look at that,
once our politicians, especially our president, for instance, George Bush, when he wanted to, you know, implement his agenda on the Middle East. But, I mean, with the whole entire corruption, you know, us paying off politicians, blah, 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 I mean, that, unfortunately, has been occurring in our country since, I would even say, the Revolutionary War. But, of course, it slowly, throughout time, progressed more and more so, and nowadays, today, our contemporary era, it is just blown out of proportion that it is, I mean, I can't even comprehend the corruption that's going on. I can only, you know, read about it and try to inform my fellow citizens, you know, my friends, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, it's up to them to kind of, you know, research it themselves. And, unfortunately, the big-time media programs, they don't, like, as you stated, they don't, you know, report on this because...
Well, here's what they do. And forgive me, Claire, and see if you agree with me on this, Claire. And, you know, we all know that, you know, me, I've got my big mouth and blah, blah, blah. You know, and this is kind of how I work at what we do with anti-media. I don't hide the fact. I'm not ashamed of it. I think people react off of emotion. You know, and I believe that's how I believe that the United States government does everything they do because they manipulate people's emotions.
Exactly.
And for me, if you can present
a story. Is it the United States government, though?
It
or is.
Or
is it society?
It's, no, it is the government.
Is it
because
ours?
There's something deeper going on. And
yeah,
for me,
it is
if
the government,
you can,
everything on
if
that
you
aspect,
can present the truth, the real deal facts to somebody and present it to them with a little bit of emotion, they'll respond to it. Because that is what the government is using for everybody.
They
get flags.
Yep.
They get,
absolutely.
They edit the.
And I'm not ashamed
the media
of it.
The way they want. I mean, that's why the White House. The White House correspondents. Blah blah blah. You know, as I'm sitting here looking at Obama on Fox News right now, he says what he wants to say, and then the media from the White House, you know, go to the entire six. Is it six or five big time, you know, CNN media corporations?
It's
and
six to be exact.
They out to the nation. And unfortunately, all of us citizens, well, a majority of us citizens, think that we are getting nothing but the, you know, verbatim truth. And as we know, that is not the verbatim truth. There is more to the story. There always is more to the story.
People
it's
just
an
act
behind the edited, or, the edited news that we've
They're
received.
Just adding their emotional
and
dragging
so
the right direction.
That causes them to become subjective once, you know, stories like this go out and, you know, the truth actually hits the American population and they believe that, you know, oh, this has got to be false. You know,
and when has the truth hit the American, when has the truth hit the American people? Tell me. When's that happened?
When has it? I mean, honestly, the truth has always hit the American people.
When? Give me an example. On mainstream media.
On mainstream media?
Right.
Never.
Right, exactly.
You know, in
all
this
they
contemporary
is...
era, they've got the power of the world. I mean, the information of the world at their fingertips. You know, you got a cell phone, a smartphone, you can Google it. I'm sorry. I mean, if you see a story.
Go ahead, Claire.
I'm sorry.
You know, the thing is with mainstream media, too, is that a lot of the outlets that people rely on at one time had elements of truth when they reported, you know, particularly the papers. A long time ago, they were more objective or at least less of a propaganda arm, and now they just really are, and people just still trust them. They trust the reputation, so they follow them anyway.
I will say even way back when, I think it was a Mark Twain quote, he even said that, hey, you still need to be wary of what you hear from other people. And he was particularly referencing the papers and stuff like that. I'm not saying there wasn't truth back then, but...
No, I think what Claire just said, though, is just hit the nail on the head. Because I think people, you know, I think they grew up with these institutions and they trusted in these institutions. Yeah. I think the same way with not only the media or ABC or NBC or CBS or whatever it may be, but with the government as well. And you trusted these entities not to lie to you. And it become kind of inbred in you to trust it. And now that we're in this world where everything has become an illusion and a lie, that you still fall back to, you know, believing in these things that you ought not do because it makes you feel comfortable.
Right.
Well, I mean, media is supposed to act as the watchdog, and instead they're acting as government's lapdog. I mean, there's a huge difference.
You absolutely know. I mean, they have literally become the Joseph Goebbels of the United States.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Amen. Amen to that, man.
You guys killed the priority.
Manny.
What's up, man?
What's up? How you doing, man? You guys are killing the cow. Let's move on to some other serious stuff.
Well, I tell you what, Claire, thank you so much for calling in tonight, dear.
Absolutely. You guys have a good night.
Yes,
you
ma'am.
Too,
you
Claire.
Too.
You too.
Bye.
Well, you know, want to say hi to Brother F.M. Gibson, Brother Chase Madden, and the other brother. Who's the other brother? Because I don't even connect with him, not even on the page and stuff like that, you know?
Daniel Perez.
Oh, Perez?
Yes.
Hey, ¿cómo estás? Bien?
¿Cómo estás? Unfortunately, I do not speak Spanish that well. I wish I did.
Okay, well, how are you anyway, stuff like that? So, you know. We've been down here monitoring a lot of good stuff out here, man. It's just, I mean, you know, going down to fighting the Tea Party and stuff like that. I haven't been called a wetback in God knows how long, and I probably got called six times at least, you know. A lot of hate, you know. That Donald Trump makes everybody else look normal. I mean, seriously. I mean, you know, it just boycotting him down here at the hotel, basically with our slogan, dump the Trump and stuff like that, you know. he thinks he's so hot and stuff like that, but now he's scared because, you know, El Chapo just, he told him, I'm coming to get you, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, he tweeted that out. That was very, very interesting, like literally a day after his escape. Man, yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to know what the atmosphere is down in Mexico after Guzman had escaped. Like, what is ever? What's the you know, general population think about this?
Well, the general population basically knows that he got help from the inside with his money, his connection, a lot of the corruption is inside. You know, the whole system. You know, it's so easy for a colonel to have, or even a captain to go in there and says, you know what, I'm taking El Chapo under my command, and then all of a sudden he can come up with a story like, oh, he escaped. I didn't have enough soldiers with me or something like that, you know. So it's just, it's crazy, you know, and in the right mind knows that, you know, he didn't just, you know. But at the same time, I will tell you something that you don't hear on regular media, and I hear it from my journalists that are risking their lives every day, friends of mine in Mexico.
And this is what
a lot of people love El Chapo because El Chapo has done a lot for the poor for the poor people and stuff like that, you know, something that the government hasn't done, you know?
Mm-hmm. My friend of mine from Honduras, me and him got to talking one day at work. We started talking and stuff, and He pretty much laid it down. You know, my wife's a Mexican, so, you know, I'm exposed to a lot of this. But he started telling me that a lot of these cartel guys, it's not like the American media makes it out. He said a lot of these cartel guys, they actually help a lot of the poor people in a lot of these poor parts of, like, Mexico and Central America and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's correct, actually, and stuff like that, you know, so... And, of course, he got offended, you know, because Trump didn't just say Mexicans. He said all Mexicans. So that included me, you know, when he says rapists and, you know, all this stuff. And now he's scared. He's calling
that,
the FBI.
That's
an
ignorant comment, I will admit. But
yeah, and it's crazy and stuff like that, you know. But we're in a country here. You guys were talking about a subject earlier. Is we have, you know, where the homeless, you know, people don't understand in the homeless we have a lot of veterans homeless. You know how sad that is? On top of waiting in the VA, we got people in the streets that are homeless. And
oh,
I'm talking about, it's just amazing. It's just amazing.
Well, you know, I mean, like you were just touching on how, especially I'm sure in the state of Sinaloa, you know, Chapo is seen as, you know, basically the people love him more than they love the president because he gives back to the community.
Yeah, he said they made a song after him. He's like a hero, basically, for a lot of people in my country, stuff like that. And it's just amazing and stuff like that, you know. And so, I don't want people in Mexico to think everybody's like Donald Trump down here and stuff like that, you know.
And I don't want everyone in Mexico to think like we're all like Donald Trump, you know.
exactly, you know. Actually, a friend of mine from the Telemundo. He saw, you know, Shannon's picture, and I said, it's okay, bro. He's my Venado brother. He's not migra, because he had this haircut, you know. Mm-hmm. I said, no, he's not immigration. He's a good guy.
But, I mean, as the, you know, as a Mexican citizen yourself, I mean, with the president, Enrique Felipe, or I forget his last name, Enrique, though, right?
Enrique Peña Nieto.
So... He has, his entire administration has, you know, that was his number one thing, to combat the Mexican cartels, and then this occurs. But yet, like you just stated, the Mexican people, especially in his home state, Chapo Guzman's home state, still love him more than they do the administration. So what, I mean...
Exactly.
Actually,
they love him so much that you won't hear it on the media here and you know, in your regular media, you know. that actually people would like to see El Chapo run for president. I mean, that's how bad our corruption is with the regular politicians, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if that happened, I don't think the United States would allow that, honestly.
I mean, they wouldn't, but I tell you what, Manny, it reminds me of...
So corrupt,
it reminds me very much of a modern-day Robin Hood. I mean,
yeah.
that seems exactly what it is. You know, you've got this guy that, you know, he's against the system, but he's helping the people, you know... Mm-hmm. And who are the people going to, you know, respond to? They're going to go to the person that's actually seemingly cares about them. Now, at the end of the day, Manny, do you think that
it's human nature
that that either the government or the cartels, do you think they actually care about the people, or do you think that, that both entities are still caring about themselves ultimately and are willing to sell out both sides? Or do you think that it's a genuine, you know, concern for the people?
Well, it's actually more people are against the government because they're now mad at the American government, and I should say the U.S. government, because when you say America, you're making it look like it's just the United States, and people should know that Americas are bigger than that, you know?
Not at all.
And the bottom line is this, is they're sending so much equipment, and all this new equipment and stuff like that, so the people down there do not trust the government from here or our government. They trust the cartels a lot more. They'll take, if they're going to pick one, they'd rather just at least one thing they say about the cartels. If they're going to say they're going to do something, they do it, including killing you. If they're going to tell you they're going to kill you, they're going to do it. You know what I mean? It's as simple as that, you know. So that's kind of sad in a way, you know.
Exactly. It's very sad. I mean, I think it's very sad that, granted, I'm glad it's a Robin Hood type of situation, but the fact that, you know, a drug cartel that actually, you know, that's where they get the majority of their money, well, all of their money, rather, is, you know, cherished by the people more so than the Mexican government. And, I mean, granted, I will say, you know, that's maybe a similarity here in the United States, but not on any same scale with a drug cartel or anything. But, just the amount of corruption, what I guess I'm trying to base this off of is the amount of corruption the Mexican government has, and all they do is combat, and of course, President Enrique came in, and he increased it tenfold, and it's caused even more chaos that it's turned more people to Chapo Guzman. It's, when is it going to be a matter of, you know, can we settle our differences and work together? And then, you know, maybe they'll decide not to, you know, grow so many drugs and ship them to the United States, and then us.
Yeah. This is the main thing that's happening, FM and everybody else. Basically, the problem, you know, when we get a good candidate, the United States is one of the things that, you know, I hope it's not going to blow you away, but the truth is true. It's not opinion. Okay, it's just facts. Is that when we do have a good candidate, the United States has a legacy, and I want to say a legacy, that they can make anybody look like a criminal, even if they're honest to the max, you know? I mean, it's just amazing. When we get a good guy, the United States tears him down, because obviously this country wants somebody down there that will be a puppet to this country and stuff like that. That's
Manny,
just a sad,
Manny, you know? We've seen that in this country with Ron Paul. You know, I mean, you can't have... Not that there's many legitimate candidates that run in this country, but but look at somebody like Donald Trump, okay? Now, to me, Donald Trump is a very moot point, but at the same time, he has a lot of financial backing. Because to me, Donald Trump is irrelevant because he's a joke. Like, it's like he doesn't represent anybody other than himself. And this doesn't, you know, represent a country or this or that. It's a cartoon character, and it's a piece of theater. And it's just everybody look over here at this is what's happening right now. Meanwhile, whoever they're going to elect, because we both know, Manny, for a fact, Donald Trump will never, ever, ever, ever become president in this country.
Who knows?
Well,
he's not going to become president.
Have you ever heard the term populist?
He's not.
The term populist is.
They've thrown the craziest person out there they could.
Look at America somebody today. Like,
doesn't matter. Look, they've thrown the craziest person out there they could to get all this attention.
No, Donald Trump did it himself. I mean, he's Donald Trump.
Hey, it don't matter.
Donald Trump,
the whole country
can
like.
I'm sorry, pretending back to, you know, Mexico, but us Americans up here don't arguing about the next presidential election.
Well, the whole country could like somebody, but he ain't going to win because the whole country likes him.
So, Manny, let me ask you this. What is your personal opinion on Guzman? Because I've listened
to... My personal opinion on what? I didn't hear the last. Personal opinion on what?
Chapo.
El Chapo.
Chapo, he's been a class act. He's got a lot of money and stuff like that. And it's almost like the days of Pancho Villa. You know, the American government made Pancho Villa look like a criminal. And then one day somebody just said, well, wait a minute.
Can I say this
y'all
about...
Y'all viewing, or a majority of Mexicans are viewing him as Pancho Villa. That's very interesting to me, really.
Yeah, exactly, because think about it. Here in the United States, the United States government is telling the Mexican government, bring that guy over here because he's, you know, he's a criminal and stuff like that. But yet the people said, wait a minute, you applaud Robin Hood, but you make Pancho Villa a criminal. Well, our Pancho Villa is our Robin Hood. So if you praise your Robin Hood, you should be praising our Robin Hood because he's basically not taking away from the poor. He's taking away from the rich, which used to be worth our money anyway. He's taking it back and giving it back to the poor. That's a Robin Hood. Wilson's feeling for his own good.
And I completely agree with you, but also to you, I mean, I see both perspectives as an American and then, you know, as the Mexican perspective, saying, of course, this is the, you know, giving back to the poor. Yeah, you know, Pancho Villa, that's... I was actually shocked that you even compared it, well, that he's even being compared to that. But unfortunately, that's just this contemporary era that we're experiencing right now that we, I guess, as Americans are subjected because, number one, he's sending, you know, billions and billions of dollars of drugs across the border to the United States and across the world, rather, that are killing, you know, human beings. But as you're saying, too, of course, you know, he's bringing that money back and making the community there better. And I mean, with that, I guess, you know, the whole Pancho Villa, you know.
Yeah, but you got to see the other side of the coin, too. It's like as Chapo says. My partners in the business, my partners in the business to bring drugs to the United States is the CIA. So figure that one out.
Well, and that's a whole different subject that we could go into, but we'd probably need another hour to discuss that on how the CIA. How the CIA is probably, you know, allowing that, and not probably, but is allowing that, as we've seen with our ex-attorney general with the whole Fast and Furious program. But we won't get into that because we don't have enough time, unfortunately.
I just wanted to mention that because I want you to know, if people need the cartel down there, everybody says it in Latin America, it's what keeps Wall Street going. Because that's a lot of money. That is a big, big
Keeps the, well, it's not big just Wall Street. I mean, Mexico's a part of it too. It's globalization. It's all, you know, I mean, it's not just Wall Street. It's everywhere. Unfortunately.
When they arrested Arellano Felix, he smiled at the DEA. He said, number one, I've already been replaced. And number two, you can't put me out of business because you're our number one customer. He was saying that to the United States, smiling when he was going to jail.
I will hear on that. Let me change subject real quick, though, and ask you a personal question. A personal question for me, or maybe for a majority of Americans. As an American citizen, of course, we do, you know, we are a lot concerned on the amount of immigrants coming across the border. Granted, we're not Donald Trump. We don't think that all Mexicans are rapists or drug dealers.
I'm not concerned about it. Let them come over.
They support our economy, and I'm for that. But my number one concern is the border security. You know, for instance, we have this whole Middle Eastern war going on with terrorists or, you know, anybody who hates America. They can easily fly to Mexico and then cross the border and then attack us as citizens. And so as a country, what are y'all, you know, implementing or trying to do to help us in that aspect?
Well, Mexico is not doing nothing because the U.S. government is telling them we have to keep this money coming, you know, to you guys so that it looks like we're fighting the drug war. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing nobody gets is that the Mexican government is an arm of the U.S. government, and it's all a big ruse is to play up the drug war into this situation. So to sit here and insinuate and to demonize people for the most absolutely ridiculous things ever is asinine to me. And they want to sit here and play it off as this or that. And of course, it all goes back to the drug war and what's going on down in Mexico with the drug war and why the cartels are able to succeed is because of the drug war. And as long as Mexico has harsh drug laws and the United States keeps their laws in place, that's going to succeed.
I agree.
But nobody cares about the people, and it's all this pretending about the people, and they care about your welfare and my welfare. Nobody cares about that. Nobody cares. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. No. They don't care about if you're from Baja, California, or you're from California.
The majority doesn't care about it. But again, pertaining back to that question, though, Manny, what do you think as an American, I mean a Mexican citizen, y'all should do to contribute, you know, into helping secure our border so that way our politicians don't have, like, I mean...
What is it their business? What do they care? Who cares? Like, that's a stupid question to me. Like, what...
I mean, they can do things as if, you know, like, check passports that come in, you know? Do whole security
check. Let me tell you what, they're in the middle of a major war down in Mexico. Do you think any of them, have time to get money for a fucking passport? They don't. Their family members are getting slaughtered. People are getting killed.
I'm not saying the...
Let me tell you what, now, this is a sensitive subject to me. People are getting fucking killed down there, man. They don't have time for that shit.
Yeah. Actually, I come from a state where the 43 students got killed by the government and stuff like that. That's how bad it is. It happened in my home state of Guerrero.
And Manny, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, completely just, you know, not regarding what's going on down there, which I know is completely terrible. I mean,
it's
y'all
a
are
war down there. It's not
war.
No just
and
a
not
gang
a,
war.
This
it's
is a
war.
Well, let me explain it to you this way because I'm not biased because I see both sides. The bottom line. The immigrant that comes from down there, we don't come down here. I don't care what immigrant comes from anywhere. We come to work. You know, we didn't come to this country to commit crimes because the bottom line, we can commit crimes in our own country. I have to commit crimes in Mexico and make myself a wealthy person working for those guys out there. But
right.
No, I wanted to come and have an honest job, you know, stuff like that.
Exactly.
So we can come down here. Now, the U.S. government calls it immigration. But if you think about it, I don't feel like we as people around the world immigrate. It's the borders that the government puts up there. We shouldn't be calling ourselves immigrating. We should call ourselves migrating, which is a big difference. You know what I mean?
Right. There's a good portion of this.
You're migrating here, and then once you're here, you're an immigrant. I mean, Manny, I don't object to that. I've got Mexican heritage. I'm the epitome of the American melting pot. I have Mexican heritage. I have English heritage. I have German heritage. I have French heritage. Irish heritage.
Who cares?
Everything.
Who cares?
I am the epitome of what America is. That's why I agree.
Who cares? Who cares? Listen, everybody's so hung up on this heritage or where you were born or this.
Yeah.
Like, let me just say, it's bogus.
Amen.
It's bogus.
Amen.
No, it is bogus. I don't give a crap about your ancestors. I don't care about my ancestors.
Amen. Exactly.
I don't. I care about the people on this planet today that want to work and provide for themselves. And for you to sit here and tell me because your ancestors, I don't care.
People that are alive
on this planet today need to be able to provide for themselves.
And it's not only that, it's to be able to escape from a dangerous environment. Nobody wants their children living in poverty and dangerous environment, man. That's what it's all about. Nobody wants their kids living in a dangerous environment.
Anyways, Manny, going back to you, I'm sorry about that. But...
Well, Manny, you know I'm going to rip it when I feel it.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know, it's
just that people, you know, people have this fear. The government likes to put fear in people about the people coming here. Number one, nobody's illegal. We're undocumented. Big difference. You know, there's no such thing as illegal.
Exactly.
That's what I'm trying to say earlier. The many questions I was asking you. I mean, one, again, a majority of Americans think that this is occurring. You know, that even, you know, Donald Trump himself can make these racist comments against Mexicans and then still progress in the polls is because of the whole entire, you know, influx of immigrants from Mexico that they think are just, you know, terrible, all this whole border issue, blah, 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 which is, you know, it's stupid. It's subjective. It's stupid, honestly, especially when...
You know what the conversation is with the Tea Party? Because I'm a very peaceful protester. There's no such thing as bad language. I don't use the word hate. I just go to educate people. And this is what I tell people when they read the history. I tell people, look, you know, you're telling us to go back, yet you took this country away from Mexico by force and stuff like that. Now... Forget about Mexico. When people say to me, go back, I'm saying, wait a minute, are you Native American? No. Then what are you telling me to go back for? Because, you know, I mean, I'm supposedly in red man land, you know what I mean? And stuff like that, you know? So people got their history all messed up. You know, they got to get into the history books and stuff like that. Another thing I tell people take everything for granted here as far as the Constitution. I know the Constitution better than some people that were, actually most people that were born here. Why? Because I had to pass a test to become a U.S. citizen, and it's 100 questions, and you better know who you're talking about, or you don't pass the test, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, I think you just nailed it. I think you just nailed it on the head, Manny. And you know me and you completely agree on this. And to me, sitting here saying your heritage is this or it's that, like, I know how I view things. And you know what? I don't care where your parents were born, Manny. I don't care where my parents were born. I don't care if they're black, Mexican, white, whatever. You know what? We are who we are, born where we were, and we're people trying to survive day to day, and we should take care and look out for each other. Period.
Exactly.
Period.
Exactly.
And it's nonsense. It's nonsense
to sit
here and say, but your heritage is from this place. It's
I'm
like, are you serious? Like, your heritage is from some place?
I
don't care. It's my show, and I'm cutting it off right now. Because you know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about people getting together and loving each other. And this is nonsense that they want to sit here talking about you're from this place or have this division.
That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm saying you're 100% behind you. But we as a people have to figure out where this is coming from and why it's happening.
It's coming from control. People want to control you and they want to keep you divided. That's where it's coming from.
Hey, you're completely right. We just need, we just need to say, you know, fuck the government and rise up. Everywhere.
Look,
every nation.
We could.
Well, I'm not opposed to that idea.
It's about people taking care of themselves and their own community.
And start treating people like human beings need to be treated.
We're all brothers and sisters, really.
That's it. Because you know what? Manny, you were more on a different side of the world than me. There's no difference between me and you. We've met each other. One of the greatest experiences of my life. Loved it. We're brothers.
Oh. Man, I appreciate that and stuff like that. I mean, I was just like, wow, meeting you is just like, wow. I never expected it in my wildest dream to actually have you come down here, and I didn't even know about it. I'm like, wow, that was great, actually.
I felt the same way. I mean, it was just a huge experience.
Brother Manny, I want you to, I hope you come down in Birmingham one day, man. We'd love to have you out here, man.
I might take you up on it. I appreciate that. I know because you're saying it from your heart. You're not just saying it for the hell of it. I know that.
Oh,
you know, I feel it.
And Manny, I definitely have had a good time speaking to you tonight. I hope we have plenty of other opportunities. And actually, I would definitely love to meet you in person.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. FM.
Thank you,
Manny. Lots of love to you, man.
Lots
of love. Down here in Hollywood, okay?
Yes, sir.
Take it easy, buddy.
Man, yeah, Manny's one of my favorite people in the world.
He's very.
He knows the score. I mean, period.
Exactly.
He knows what's going on.
He's like, you know,
he's
the epitome of the anti-media here in the United States. But
he's also a veteran activist. He's done a lot.
Unfortunately,
man.
If only Mexico had a better infrastructure.
I think Chase just nailed it on the head. He's better an activist. And the situation is, as an activist, Manny doesn't have this liberal agenda or this conservative agenda or whatever you want to call it.
He has a people agenda.
He has the agenda for the people. That's it. And
he
that's why I have such respect for Manny.
Yeah, he has a big heart. And
right,
that's what
because
everyone should have.
He's looking out for people. He doesn't care about your politics or your views. It's about the person and about the presentation, about how we can take care of everybody.
And I think you kind of took me out of context earlier, I will admit. Because, I'm the same way, like Manny. I've got the big heart. But I am the analyst who, you know, views it how it is, you know, on many perspectives. And I try to figure out how do we get better at this as a nation, not only as a nation, as a world.
We drop the hate. It's really that simple. I know it sounds crazy. I know it sounds crazy. I know
it. It's not that simple. That's a simple answer to it, but it's a very, very complex equation.
If everybody got over look, fear, we've got a minute left. Here's the thing. Let me explain this to everybody. There is a choice. Bill Hicks said it. There is a choice right now between fear and love. You have a choice to do one or the other. You can choose fear or you can choose love. That is what you have in your life right now. If you want to choose fear, go for it. And you're going to feel compelled to be scared of these things and these people that they're talking about. If you want to choose love, you're going to be open and love the people around you and love the people next to you, regardless of their skin color or what they say, because you're going to know that they're just like you and there's an inherent love within you next to them.
And that is a beautiful quote, I will admit. It really is. But unfortunately, that's one quote of 7-point-something billion right now.
Well, you know what? I don't really care. But I tell you what, join Nick tomorrow night on Anti-Media Radio. Me and Shannon will be back on Thursday. Anti-Media Radio out. Love y'all.
Bye, y'all.
Go ahead. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.